Hello, and welcome to Diving Into Diabetes, the podcast where we explore the latest advances in best practices on individualized diabetes care. I'm your host, Dr. Alice Cheng from Toronto, Canada, and with me on the program is Dr. James Kim, a general practitioner from Calgary, Alberta, with special interest in diabetes, chronic migraine, and binge eating disorder. He works as a clinical assistant professor at the University of Calgary, Department of Family Medicine, and holds a number of positions within Diabetes Canada, including steering committee member of the Clinical Practice Guidelines and a co-chair of the Primary Care Interest Group. He is the perfect person to have on this podcast episode to discuss treatment priorities in type 2 diabetes in the primary care setting. Welcome, James.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Dr. Cheng.
Well, let's start broadly. So what do you think the role of primary care is in the treatment of type 2 diabetes?
So primary care physicians play a huge role in managing chronic disease in general, including type 2 diabetes. We are in a very fortunate and privileged position where I think people are entrusting one of their biggest assets in their life, what we call health, and being a primary care allows us to manage them from the cradle to the grave very closely. And this allows us to foster trust and deeper understanding of the patient's health. And most often, we happen to be the first contact or the first point of a contact for their health issues. Therefore, I feel that we play a very important role from the early part of a diabetes journey by screening and diagnosing diabetes in the community. Then we can assist people living with type 2 diabetes to navigate through their conditions by personalizing and implementing their management plans. We are also able to fine-tune their lifestyle modifications and medications management a lot faster than the specialists, as we primary care providers can be accessed a lot easier and a lot quicker than the specialist. We can do this through regular checkups and follow-ups and meeting patients' needs a lot quicker. And these are very important factors because, you know, as you know, Dr. Cheng, early diagnosis and achieving the glycemic target quicker translates into significant better cardiorenal outcomes, which is what we aim to do in type 2 diabetes management. So the primary care physician should screen for the complications of type 2 diabetes, and some of them require some blood test, very simple as that. So we can use a blood test to look for things like a CKD, or I guess we can say the urine test as well, and a MASH, which is also now called a metabolic dysfunction steatohepatitis. There was a bit of a terminology change, and we used to call this NASH in the past. But sometimes we need to put our quarterback shoes and refer them to the specialists, such as optometrists for the eye exams, and endocrinologists, and even podiatrists if required. There are studies to demonstrate that having primary care physicians actually reduces mortality and morbidity, and reduces the ER visits and improves the quality of life and reduces the complications. It's kind of sad that I'm saying this because I don't have one. But, you know, therefore, I feel that although I'm a bit biased, I think the role of a primary care physician is absolutely critical in management of any chronic disease, including type 2 diabetes.
I couldn't agree with you more, James. I completely agree. And it's not uncommon that someone's referred to me as a specialist and I may make certain suggestions, but I can tell in their face that they're hesitant, at which point I'll say, I'll send a letter to your family doctor. Why don't you go and have a conversation with them? And then you see this look of relief on their face because they're thinking, you know, who is this lady? I just met her. And then here's this other person who I've known, as you said, cradle to grave, right? I mean, you fostered that relationship with. So I completely agree. Primary care has an absolutely critical role in chronic disease management, especially in the diabetes space. So with that in mind, when you're addressing type 2 diabetes, what are the main treatment goals and priorities that you have?
So once someone is diagnosed with diabetes, and just like any chronic disease management, then our main goal essentially becomes the quality of life improvement. And I think we can divide this into two main parts. So the first part will be the managing their physical health, and the second part will be the managing the mental health. So in terms of a physical health, our focus turns into diabetes complication preventions, which includes early screening detections via various tests for the right people, and involving other healthcare professionals, such as optometrists and so on. Once diabetes-related complications develop, then the management of the complications by adjusting and initiating certain cardiorenally protective medications becomes the key aspect of type 2 diabetes management for us. Meanwhile, managing the cardiovascular risk factors such as blood glucose management, which is probably the key thing about type 2 diabetes management, and but not to neglect the hypertension management and cholesterol management. And all of these are very important to reduce the cardiovascular risks and the potential events in the future. So this becomes an incredibly important goal. And then we can never neglect the mental health and the psychosocial impact that diabetes has on people. And I personally need to improve on this aspect, but we need to support them in psychosocial aspect of diabetes, because some of these psychosocial aspect and mental health aspect of the person can actually impact the diabetes negatively, directly and indirectly. So as you can see, our priority in primary care is to improve the patient's quality of life by focusing on the complications, preventions and diagnosis, and managing them as a whole person, including the mental and psychosocial aspect of health.
I really like the way you split that out into the sort of physical health and then the mental health piece. And to me, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking it fits into the whole ABCDES paradigm, in that one of the S's could potentially be psychosocial, even though it doesn't start with an S. But you know what I mean? Like the sound would at least fit, because I think remembering that piece of it, I think, is critical. It's excellent. So what are some of the main challenges then, or barriers that you and or your patients face when trying to reach these goals, and any particular solutions that you've come up with?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think, you know, I'm trying to correct and improve the objective number, like A1C, is probably easier than dealing with the mental health and the psychosocial aspect, which probably is the bigger challenge for us. These impacts diabetes so negatively, directly and indirectly, but in a massive scale. We can prescribe the best medication backed with those most stunning research data ever. But if these issues are not addressed, it's going to be an uphill battle. So I usually reach out for the external help, so such as psychologists and behavioral health consultants, nurses, diabetes educators, social workers, dietitians, and so on. I learned very quickly early in my career that I cannot manage diabetes by myself, and that's not possible. So yeah, I do tend to reach out a lot.
As we should, right? I mean, it's a multidisciplinary team that we really need to be thinking about, and it's in the best interest of the person living with diabetes to have all hands on deck and able to help with the part that they have expertise on.
No, I totally agree.
So then how do you organize your office then? Like now we're getting very, very practical in terms of organization of care, because we know that the organization of care, in other words, the way you organize your office, the way the systems run in your practice, make a world of difference, sometimes as much of a difference as medications. So any tips or tricks, and how do you go about organizing care in your office?
So yeah, so I'll tell you an interesting story. So I don't work in a healthcare center or university-affiliated multidisciplinary clinics. And I was actually offered a post there before, and it took me 5 seconds to decline it. And on the hindsight, it was 4 seconds longer than I should have said no. And the reason is that I wanted to show people, my colleagues, family physicians, and primary care healthcare providers, that you don't have to be in the healthcare centers and the university-affiliated multidisciplinary clinics to actually really make difference in diabetes management. So therefore, what I have done is that I tend to utilize the resources in the community. So we do have a various support programs through Primary Care Network in Alberta, which is a non-for-profit organization that supports the community primary care physicians with the support of the Allied Healthcare Access. And over the years, I have created very good relationship with pharmacists near me, and they are fantastic resources and support my patients through their diabetes journey, not just from the medication perspective, but also the counseling perspective as well. And I'm sure, Dr. Chang, you probably had a number of cases in the past where patients were happy to share something else with the pharmacist, but not necessarily with you, or at least that happens to me a lot, yeah. So I think pharmacists play a really, really crucial role. I mean, besides, I mean, they're covered in my back so many times for various reasons, such as writing not probably the best medication for the patients and so on. So I tend to utilize them a lot. My main tip for the primary care physicians out there is to recognize all the resources around you and how you can utilize them. That will be really crucial. So, for example, like a pharmacist are not just cashiers or medication sellers in their shop. I think this is so important. And there's so much more that they can do for our patients. So as a matter of fact, some studies actually have shown that the pharmacists actually do better job in managing diabetes than physicians. I mean, there was one study that I read from UK and I was like, oh, you know, this must be just a fluke. And then I saw another study saying the same thing. So my respect for the pharmacist has like completely like skyrocketed. And I think we need to get rid of this term allied healthcare professionals, because in my book, they're just as important healthcare professionals just as like any physicians. So let's treat them with respect, and then the outcome of the patient care will change our mutual patients' lives. And after all, we're all here to improve our patient care.
Absolutely. Now, do you do any things like certain days where you see all your patients with diabetes, or do you book them any differently in terms of the length of the visit? Do you somehow flag it on their chart that they need to come in for a diabetes visit? Like, do you do anything like that in terms of your organization of care?
I tried to do that before. And as a matter of fact, 40% of my practice is actually migraine management. I guess it probably has to do with a lack of migraine physicians or healthcare providers in Canada right now. So I've thought of doing that, you know, have a day one or Monday for diabetes and day two for, or Tuesday for migraine and so on. But then what I realized very quickly is that there was actually creating a barrier for some of our patients. So some patients could only come to see me on Wednesdays, but if my migraine day happens to be on Tuesday, well, then it becomes a huge problem. So I attempted doing that before, but I got rid of that very quickly because I realized that wasn't going to happen, especially in the area where I work. And there are a lot of a blue-collared community, so, and a lot of immigrant populations. So it's going to be quite tough for them to actually take a day off and or outside their regular day off. So no, I don't do that. So it is a little less efficient in a way from the clinic perspective, I think. But for the patient care, I'm happy to do that.
And this is why it's so great to have you on this podcast, right? Because those are the things that you read about in suggestions for organization of care, which could certainly work with some clinics. But you're right. If we're doing patient-centered care, we should not be holding them to Wednesdays only, right? I mean, maybe Wednesday is your day for them, and we should be open to it. I think having flags within our systems, whether it's paper charts or electronic charts, that remind us, hey, this is a diabetes patient. So they may be coming in for a knee pain. And then if there's something that says, hey, they also have diabetes, although you may not deal with their diabetes at that visit, that because of that flag, you see it, then you say, hey, I have not seen you for a diabetes visit in X amount of time. When you leave today, can you book a diabetes visit? So having some sort of reminder systems, I think, for ourselves can be helpful when you're dealing with many issues at the same time. And then simple things like giving people their lab requisition at the end of this appointment in preparation for the next one probably saves time. But and I think utilizing the other office staff to help for either reminders or recalls and things of that nature. But I think each office has to figure out their own system, right, as to what's going to work and to identify the chronic diseases that they want to focus on. And in your practice, it's very much migraine, but also very much diabetes.
Yeah, and also just general family medicine as well. So, I mean, I have patients with like over 10 active problems that is happening. So before I see the patient, I quickly flip through their chart and trying to figure out what needs to be done next and plan things ahead. That does help me. So I use the EMR, so electronic medical record, that allows me to see all their medical issues on one side. So that does help me to scan through things. And from the EMR perspective, I just have to update them on a regular basis. So at the end of the day, it makes my life easier. Reminders are interesting things. So if it's a reminder for me, then I sometimes get reminder fatigues, the pop-up fatigues. I've been told by some of even the hospitalists that they get way too many pop-ups, including some severe allergies. Like, oh yeah, we'll just skip through those. So I try to use them if it's absolutely necessary. Otherwise, I think I'm going to just develop a habit of just pressing clicks and okays. You know? But yeah, I mean, I think it works great in some clinics. I 100% agree with you.
I had one physician tell me who was still paper-based was they just put a pink piece of paper in the chart of the person who had diabetes.
Oh, wow.
Or when they came in and they came in for their knee, they would see the pink and they go, oh, yeah, you got diabetes. And then they would just say, hey, it's the last time I saw you for that. It was as simple as that, right? Like it's something very simple that could just help to remind people.
That is interesting. Yeah, I thought about that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. James Kim, for sharing your expertise with us today. I certainly learned a lot, and I loved the perspective that you brought about managing type 2 diabetes in primary care. And I think your passion and your enthusiasm came out in terms of recognizing the critical role that primary care, in fact, does play. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. And thank you to our audience for listening to this latest installment of the Diving Into Diabetes podcast. We hope you enjoyed our discussion on treatment priorities in type 2 diabetes in the primary care setting. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and stay tuned for new releases.